Prabhupada was explaining how the paper currency is a cheating process. He said that the government encourages people to work hard in the factories to develop the economy of the nation, yet they pay them only pieces of paper. When the government doesn't have enough pieces of paper, they print up more, and thus the whole economy is based on cheating. Prabhupada said that the Vedic economy is based on the bartering system. If the bartering system is not possible, then at least the gold standard should be used, because the gold has some value and the quantity of gold is limited. After hearing Prabhupada describe the ideal economy based on the Vedic civilization, one devotee asked, but if all transactions are done in gold, it would be very difficult to make large deals, because to carry the gold in exchanges would be very cumbersome. That's very good, replied Prabhupada. Why should there be big transactions? Big transactions mean that people are accumulating more than they require. We don't want big transactions. We want each person to have what they require. Prabhupada told a proverb about money. One man asked another, are you intelligent? The second man started to look in his pockets. The first man asked, why are you looking in your pockets? The second man said, well, if there's any money there, that means I'm intelligent. Prabhupada explained, actually in our movement, everything is going on by my intelligence and your cooperation. So you are preaching very intelligently, but if there's not money, then where is the intelligence? Prabhupada instructed that 50% of income should go to book fund and 50% should go to construction or other projects. He said that the Krishna consciousness movement was in one sense just like a business, and so it should be run in that way. In other words, it was on the basis of his books that the movement was getting its collections, whether by life membership or book sales. Therefore, just as in any business, the capital assets had to be invested in. You must therefore give 50% of your money to the book fund. We should live on a paltry income, whatever we receive by selling our magazines. But in dire necessity, when there's no other way, we may accept some service temporarily. But on principle, we should go on sankirtan, not work. So whatever Krishna gives us, we should accept on that principle. You are a senior member of the society. You should have known all these things. Anyway, send them back on sankirtan. All the Amsterdam devotees should be engaged in sankirtan, not in a cigarette factory. Letter of August 17, 1971. Prabhupada approved of his disciples making ambitious plans for spreading Krishna consciousness. But Prabhupada, one devotee asked, how are we going to get money to do all this? Prabhupada said, you make the plans, Krishna will provide the money. Concerning Ganesh worship, it is not actually necessary for us. But if someone has the sentiment for getting the blessings of Ganesh to get large amounts of money for Krishna's service, then it is all right. But anyone who takes up this kind of worship must send me at least $100,000 monthly, not less. If you cannot send this amount, you cannot do Ganesh worship. Letter of December 28, 1974. Srila Prabhupada was not keen on banking money. As soon as there will be money in the bank, he said, there will be headaches, this tax, that tax. Prabhupada said, we have no problems, although we have so much money. If we were to lose that money, still we would not be hampered in our mission. Without being checked, Krishna consciousness is prosecuted in pure devotion. Yes, one of the devotees agreed, even if we had to write the books out by hand and distribute them.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam 8th Canto, Chapter 6. The demigods and demons declare a truce. Text 9.
Rupang Taivata Purusha Purusha Shabejang
Rupang Taivata Purusha Shabejang
Shreyor Tibir Vaidika Tantrikena
Shreyor Tibir Vaidika Tantrikena
Shreyor Tabir Vaidika Tantrikena.
Shreyor Tabir Vaidika Tantrikena.
Yogena Tatasaha Nakshi Lokan.
Yogena Tatasaha Nakshi Lokan.
Pashyamya Nishmin Nuha Vishva Murtau.
Pashyamya Nishmin Nuha Vishva Murtau.
Rupang Tavaita Purusharsha Pejam.
Rupang Tavaita Purusharsha Pejam.
Shreyor Tibiya Vaidika Tantra Kena.
Shreyor Tibiya Vaidika Tantra Kena.
Yogena Tata Sahanas Trilokan.
Yogena Tata Sahanas Trilokan.
Pashyamyanus Min Uhavishva Murtau. Translation. O best of persons, O supreme director, those who actually aspire for supreme good fortune worship this form of your lordship according to the Vedic Tantras. My lord, we can see all the three worlds in you. Purport. The Vedic mantras say, Yasmin Vigyate Sarvam Evam Vigyatam Bhavati. When the devotee sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead by his meditation, or when he sees the Lord personally, face to face, he becomes aware of everything within this universe. Indeed, nothing is unknown to him. Everything within this material world is fully manifested to a devotee who has seen the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bhagavad Gita therefore advises, Tadvidhi Paripasena, Pariprasnena Sevaya. Upadekshanti jnanam jnaninas tatpadarshanam. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto you because he has seen the truth. Lord Brahma is one of these self-realized authorities. Swayambhur Naradashambhu Kumara Kapilo Manu. One must therefore accept the disciplic succession from Lord Brahma, and then one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead in fullness. Here the word Vishvamurtau indicates that everything exists in the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who is able to worship him can see everything in him and see him in everything. Om Jnana Chimanandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Malitam Yena Tajmai Sri Gurave Namaha. You may remember from reading the Krishna book and hearing about Krishna's pastimes of how Mother Yashoda looked into Krishna's mouth and saw the entire cosmic manifestation. Krishna was playing with his cowherd boyfriends and they decided to inform Mother Yashoda that little Krishna had been eating dirt. So they went and told her. And Krishna said, oh, they're just conspiring to cause me trouble. They're just being mischievous. They're just telling an untruth. They're lying. Don't believe them, Mother. If you think it's true that I've eaten dirt, the solution is quite obvious. Just look in my mouth and see if you see any dirt. So Mother Yashoda looked into Krishna's mouth and she saw the entire cosmic manifestation. And she became very astounded and she became very philosophical, wondering what's going on and how dare that I think that I am Mother Yashoda, Krishna is my son, Nanda Maharaj is my husband, Vrindavan is my home. She thought, I'm just absorbed in I, me, and mine. Because while looking at the entire cosmic manifestation within Krishna's mouth, she even saw herself. So she became very contemplative, very philosophical. But then Krishna readjusted his pastime energies, his yoga maya, and she forgot all about it. And she went back to treating Krishna just like her son. Because in the spontaneous mode of love of Godhead, You do not worry about, is Krishna the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Is Krishna the Supreme Absolute Truth? Instead, you simply know that I am Krishna's mother. I must feed him, otherwise he'll be hungry. I must bathe him, otherwise he won't be clean. He needs me to protect him. And you're always in anxiety about Krishna as he's walking around the area of Vrindavan. Just like mothers now, they're always anxious about their little children. What are they doing now while I'm in class? Are they running around causing trouble? Are they getting into some danger? Are they running out into the street? Are they drinking some poison? Or on and on it goes. So the perfection of parental love of God is that the devotee is always thinking, Krishna's dependent on me. Krishna likes to put a devotee in that situation. If the devotee has that natural taste of love of Krishna, to treat Krishna as his child or her child, Krishna likes that. All right? You should think I am dependent on you. Because unless you think that Krishna is completely dependent on you for your protection, your parental love cannot fully blossom. So the perfection of love of Godhead is that all the emotions are there that we expressed in the material world, but they're there in perfect relation to Krishna. In the spiritual world, all the emotions are simply for Krishna's pleasure and 100% absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So there is parental love, there is friendship, there's romantic love. All these things are there, but Krishna is the center, and they are simply different ways that Krishna enjoys with his devotees. And a devotee means one who is always eager to give Krishna pleasure. Prasthasmatubhavanyo vyaktavyaktasanatana yatsasarveshubhuteshu. There's another nature besides this temporary nature, this temporary material world that is our environment now. People like to talk about the environment, but they don't understand what they're dealing with. When you talk about the cosmic manifestation, what are you speaking of? Who can say? Graham, when you're speaking of the cosmic manifestation, what are you really speaking of? The cosmic manifestation, as Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, is composed of two energies, matter and spirit. It is only because of the spiritual energy that the matter can do anything. Otherwise, matter has no potency on its own to become conscious or to arrange itself. So when you speak of the cosmic manifestation, you are speaking of two energies, the material and spiritual energy. They seem to merge. In material existence, it seems that spirit has merged into matter, but actually, it is not so. So, as we become more Krishna conscious, we realize that this material world, this cosmic manifestation, is just a shadow world, a shadow representation of the real world. All the emotions that we experience in this world are very polluted and very paltry or very weak. The real arena for these emotions is the spiritual world. And there, all the emotions exist in their perfect way in relation to Krishna. In the spiritual world, there is anger, there is lust, there is envy. There is parental love, there is romantic love, there is friendship, but everything is simply for Krishna's pleasure. Therefore, all the emotions are pure. So we are making a big mistake when we crave emotional fulfillment in this world. It will simply lead us to distress because it's not there. Wrong place. You're looking for water in the desert. Of course, we have to go, sometimes some of us have to go through some learning experiences to realize that. But the fact is, you cannot find emotional fulfillment and satisfaction in this temporary material world of birth and death. Emotional fulfillment and satisfaction is there in the relationship with Krishna. In Krishna consciousness, we are not afraid of emotions, but we are afraid of material emotions. But that doesn't mean we are striving for an emotionless existence. No, we are trying to revive our spiritual emotions. And spiritual emotions are in perfect relationship to Krishna. In the spiritual world, for example, in Vrindavan, all the emotional displays, whether they're anger or happiness or lust or envy, they all go on to give Krishna pleasure. Just like when Krishna's girlfriends, when they become envious of one another, that's to give Krishna pleasure. He likes it. Oh, they're fighting over me. Of course, there's no question of material taint. There's no matter in the spiritual world. So we should never think that the emotional exchanges in Krishna's leelas, Krishna's pastimes, we should never think that these are material. As we've said so often, Krishna's pastimes are, in one sense, easy for human beings to understand because his pastimes look like human affairs. But on the other hand, Krishna's pastimes are very difficult to understand for that same reason, because they seem to resemble human affairs, and therefore we make the mistake of thinking, oh yeah, I know all about that. Krishna's just an ordinary person. I mean, he's having affairs with his friends, with his lovers, with his parents, just like I'm doing. And then you speculate further, and you think the real perfection of spiritual knowledge is no emotions, no qualities, no individuality, no variety. It takes a lot of work for the Srimad Bhagavatam to prepare us for spiritual variety, spiritual variegatedness. In these prayers, you see that the word Tantra is mentioned. More and more people today, they are running around talking about how they're practicing Tantra yoga. So-called yoga effects, that they're practicing self-realization through sex, and it's all coming from the ancient Tantra yoga literatures of India. Maybe some of you have heard this craziness. And especially, there are people coming giving lectures and workshops in Tantra yoga. Very appropriate so-called yoga for people in Kali Yuga to become interested in. Wow, sounds great. Self-realization through sex couldn't be better. What it actually is, what are the tantras? Tantra doesn't simply mean what the people think it means today. Ah, the Kama Sutra. Where's my copy? Now, Tantra refers to various procedures for attaining various results. There are tantras in the mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance. So the tantras that people are talking about when they say, Tantra yoga, yes, I'm practicing Tantra, they're trying to do tantras in the mode of ignorance. But even then, they're not doing right. In order to engage in the so-called Tantra yoga of sex, you must go through so many austerities, and you risk unleashing so many powerful energies, material energies, that human beings generally cannot control. When the kundalini, a subtle energy that is unleashed, or is supposed to be unleashed through Tantra yoga, if that is not controlled, it can drive you berserk. You can go crazy. It can cause great physical and mental damage. So there's so many austerities required, and the process is so hazardous. But as is popular in Kali Yuga, people simply discard all the austerities. They have no idea of all the dangers, and they just focus on certain elements of Tantra yoga. Even if you can practice Tantra yoga according to the instructions of these text meant for people in the mode of ignorance. Even if you can do that, what is the point? If you cannot understand that you're not the body, you cannot even get preliminary understanding in spiritual knowledge. We also have our tantras. It's not that we're not practicing tantra yoga. Did you know that? We are also practicing tantra yoga, but we are using the transcendental tantras. It's not that these silly people who run around in their lust and their illicit sex and say, we are practicing tantra yoga. It's not that we are not, but there are different tantras for people on different levels. We are properly practicing the transcendental tantras. Therefore, Prabhupada mentions in these synonyms, Vaidika, under the direction of Vedic instructions, Vaidika Tantrikena, realized by followers of tantras like Narada Pancharatra. There are Vaishnava tantras compiled by persons like Narada Muni, pure devotee. They are containing procedures and practices for becoming Krishna conscious. We follow those. So do not become bewildered and think that Tantra Yoga is what these people say it is, and that it's only that. Remember, there are tantras for people in the mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance. And even their so-called Tantra Yoga that they're practicing, which is a fragment of the instructions for people in the mode of ignorance, they're not doing it properly. You must go through such extreme austerity before the so-called nectar part comes. And even that is nothing like what they're making it. You have to do things like, for example, go to cemeteries and collect souls and all sorts of... For example, you all know that according to the Vedas, there are instructions for eating meat. People in the mode of ignorance and passion, they may want to eat meat, so the Vedic injunctions contain instructions for them. There's also instructions for drinking liquor. But these are instructions meant for those in the lowest of the modes of nature. They're not meant for Vaishnavas. If you want to kill an animal and eat it, first of all, there's no question of meat eating without you killing the animal yourself. There's no question of slaughterhouses. You want to eat meat, you must kill the animal yourself. And the Sanskrit word for meat is mamsa. That means me, you. Now I am killing and eating you. In the next life, therefore, you can kill me and eat me. Everything in the Sanskrit language is very precise. So you call meat mamsa. Me, you. Reciprocal relationship. So according to the Vedic injunctions, as I'm sure you've all heard, only on certain days of the month, dark moon night, you go out at midnight, pitch dark, no moon, and then you can kill the animal, never a cow, but something like a goat or like that. And you cut its throat yourself, and before you cut the animal's throat at midnight on a dark moon night, you must whisper into its ear, I am killing you to eat you. In your next life, you can kill me and eat me. You can imagine on a midnight, on a dark moon night, you know, say, you know, with a knife to cut an animal's throat, and then you whisper into its ear. This kind of a thing. Obviously, it's enough to make any intelligent person want to refrain from the whole practice. So, yes, we do follow tantras, but we follow the Vaishnava transcendental tantras, like Narada Pancharatra. We also practice mystic yoga. It's also mentioned in this verse, yogena, by practice of mystic yoga. What is our mystic yoga? That everything we do throughout the day brings us in direct contact with Krishna. We can see Krishna, we can taste Krishna, we can hear Krishna, we can smell Krishna, we can serve Krishna. This is the kind of experience and lifestyle that we are being given. Everyone today is very much concerned with lifestyle. I've got to find the appropriate lifestyle for me. And especially here in New Zealand, we all aspire a lifestyle block. a lifestyle piece of little land where we can just be ourselves and no one will bother us. You'll never find your real lifestyle block in this material world. You're looking in the wrong place. You want that place where there's peace and happiness, then you must get out of the material world. So the temple is a training place, how to get your lifestyle blocked in the spiritual world. Why do we want to set up shop, so to speak, here in the material world? We want to get out as quick as possible. These basic things we should not forget. We want to get out of this material world as quick as possible. And how do you do that? By using everything in this world for Krishna's pleasure. When you learn the art, science, and culture of how to use everything for Krishna's pleasure, then you can see Krishna very clearly. We should not make the mistake of trying to practice devotional service according to the judgments of our material senses. That is why we have the scriptures. They bind us. They give us information of what is beyond our senses, of what we cannot see. I was talking to one lady. She says she's coming Sunday, who was on television with us from the Environmental Center. And so she came to lunch at Govinda's yesterday with the chaplain of the university. And so she was telling me how, I never think of these questions, who am I, or what is the nature of this world, and where I came from, where I should be going. I don't find any problem that I don't think about these things. So I said, well, wait a minute now. Here you are. You're from the Environmental Center, and you're trying to tell people that although they cannot immediately see the effects of their activities, there are polluting results. Just like you're trying to get the farmers not to use chemicals in their agriculture, because later these chemicals will bring about hazardous results. And even though the farmers may not be able to see it now, it will happen in the future. So I explained to her that your whole environmental campaign is based on educating people that just because you can't see the hazardous results, that doesn't mean these results won't come. You did not foresee anything about the hole in the ozone, but it happened. So I said, why can't you take that same intelligence and apply it to Krishna consciousness? We are trying to educate people in the results of their activities, even though they can't see them right now. Just like when you contract a disease, you may not be able to see how you got it, but you will get it if you're in a disease circumstance. You'll get sick. So we are trying to teach people how not to get another material body. We are trying to teach people how to avoid horrible destinations in their future. You're trying to teach people how not to get another material body. So just because, I told her, just because you cannot see these things now, you cannot see the reactions to your activities, that doesn't mean they won't come. Therefore, there's no question of environmental awareness without understanding the whole picture. And who is teaching the whole picture? We are the only ones who are teaching the whole picture because we are the only ones giving knowledge about the whole. People are not attracted to religions because they're getting no knowledge, no information. God, what is this God? But we are giving all information about God. How to see God, how to listen to God, how to serve God. Even ultimately in spiritual perfection, how to be God's friend, God's lover, God's parent. And where does all the information come from? It comes from God. It comes from the complete whole, Krishna. You're a tiny thing, you can give information. If you want to get to the center of the city, you go like this, you go like that. Krishna is the complete whole. He also gives information, but he gives information about everything. Therefore, as stated in this purport, when the devotee sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead by his meditation, or when he sees the Lord personally face to face, he becomes aware of everything within this universe. Indeed, nothing is unknown to him. So for anyone who's practicing Krishna consciousness, there's nothing that's unknown to you. You understand how the universe is working. You understand why you have this body. You understand how to not get another body. You understand what are material activities, how matter and spirit interact in this temporary realm. And you understand about spiritual activities. Even you understand about Krishna's personal private playground, Vrindavan, where there's no matter. All these things you understand, therefore there's nothing that's unknown to you. The statement that there's nothing unknown to you doesn't mean that you know the score of the baseball game in New York last night. No, that's not considered knowledge according to the Vedic viewpoint. Knowledge means to know matter, spirit, and the controller of both. These things are all available for your understanding. Hearing, even if you don't understand everything that you hear immediately, the sound vibration purifies us of material contamination. Yes. It's not simply an intellectual process, like going to a school and taking lessons. By being in contact with sound vibration about Krishna amongst the association of practitioners of Krishna consciousness, you get realization, you get perception in that way. Yes, what is becoming clear to you? Krishna is becoming more clear to you. And Krishna will especially become clear when you chant his name. You like someone to chant your name, right? With love and devotion. What is your name again?
Leah.
Suppose. Leah. 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 Music to your ears, right? Yes. If they want to serve you and they're singing like that, right? So, similarly, Krishna enjoys it when we call his name, wanting to serve him. Our whole entanglement in this world is because we're trying to imitate Krishna. Yes, people should enjoy. I should enjoy when people call my name, and these people should all be ready to serve me. We have that tendency because we are part of Krishna. In Krishna, you'll find the real experience of that. Krishna is entitled to enjoy a person calling his name because Krishna is the supreme everything. Whereas somebody calls our name, what can we actually do for anybody? You probably come to that realization by now. What can you actually do for anyone? What can you actually do for your family, your friends, society? Everyone's actually going their own way, you know, according to karma generated in their past life. You can think, well, I can put food on the table, but you didn't even make the food. You're taking ingredients created by someone else to make food. Even your body itself is made of ingredients that you haven't created. So what can we actually do for anyone other than help them in their spiritual development? But because we have false egos, we like to feel that we are the providers. We are the storehouses of plenty. Come to me and I will nourish you. Krishna consciousness means to come to Krishna. Krishna will nourish us. We have one very nice bun here. Doing so nicely. Did you know that you get the credit for whatever he does? Yeah. That is the spiritual reality. Whatever spiritual advancement he makes, you get the credit. Even if you don't do anything, you'll still get the credit from him. And what speaker would you do something? Wow. You got a lot going for you, see? You got to find all the angles. He's doing the best thing for the family. Because all the family members will get credit from his endeavors in Krishna consciousness. So he's being the most responsible. People today talk about, you have to be responsible. Not only people today, but always. You're a human being. You have obligations to your family, to society. You must be responsible. Don't be irresponsible. Don't be whimsical. Always remember what your duties are to your family, to your society. One who is practicing Krishna consciousness is the most responsible. Because, first of all, we have to be responsible for ourselves to stop the cycle of repeated birth and death. Secondly, by those efforts in Krishna consciousness to perfect ourselves, our family members and society also get credit from that. Eternal credit. In other words, the credit that you get from his efforts won't be lost at the time of death. But whatever money he might provide for you, whatever prestige he might provide for you, that'll all be lost at the time of death. But the credits that he can provide for you from Krishna consciousness, that is eternal. Therefore, he's doing the most responsible thing. Otherwise, any other kind of son you can have in any species of life. Rabbits have sons, dogs have sons, horses have sons. But only as a human mother can you have a son who can become Krishna conscious. So he's actually being the real son. By trying to become Krishna conscious, he's demonstrating the real value of having the human body. Otherwise, there's nothing special about having sons and daughters and mothers and fathers. It goes on in every species, you know? Yes. And, of course, your daughter, how old is she?
12.
What does a daughter have to look forward to in this day and age? Especially when you're 12 years old. All such a daughter has to look forward to, well, not her, but in general, is simply things that used to make parents worry. Used to. Now it's considered normal. Well, you're 12 years old, so maybe 30 years ago, the parents would be in complete anxiety. You're 12, and you better behave yourself. You're getting to an age where you're getting older. You better behave. I don't want to see or hear about you doing any kind of nonsense. Then it changed. About 20 years ago, it changed. You're 12 years old, and I know that you're going to be doing some nonsense. Just don't let me see it. Then 10 years ago, it changed even more. You're 12, and you're going to be doing things, I don't even think it's nonsense. Do it at home anyway. What's the big deal? That's the way it is now. Don't hide it, Don't worry about all this old-fashioned morality and these old-fashioned rules and regulations. You're 12, time to have fun. Go ahead. But if she comes here, she will learn a life of purity. And there's no question of happiness without purity. There's no question of happiness without purity. But no one's interested in purity these days because they don't see the pleasure in it. They think that purity interferes with happiness. That's because they have no understanding of what really is happiness. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.
There are unlimited dimensions. You cannot count them all, but still, you'll be lost in the material world. You've got to find out the source of all the dimensions and take knowledge from that source. Otherwise, you'll be discovering this dimension, that dimension, but still, you'll never get out of the material confines. Yes. There are so many things we cannot see. There are so many things we cannot hear. That doesn't mean they don't exist. A dog can hear higher sound than you. A cat can see things you can't see at night. We don't see life on other planets. Life is there.